Bible readings today are from Job 19, 23 to 27. Oh, that my words were written down. Oh, that they were inscribed in a book. Oh, that with an iron pen and with lead they were engraved on a rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and then that at the last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been destroyed, then in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see on my side, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. My heart faints within me. The second reading is Luke 20, 27 to 38. Some Sadducees, those who say there is no resurrection, came to him and asked him a question. Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife and no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. Now there were seven brothers. The first married and died childless. Then the second and the third married her. And so, in the same way, all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife will the woman be? For the seven had married her. Jesus said to them, those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die any more, because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in the story about the bush, where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Now he is God not of the dead, but of the living. For to him all of them are alive.
It's not everybody's favourite cup of tea, having to answer questions about Christian faith. Raise your hands if you like to answer those sorts of questions about Scripture or God, or if someone comes up to you and says, I've got this question about God, would you be willing to answer it? Who would like to answer such a question? Who feels encouraged? One, two, okay. Or maybe three. Lorraine's kind of thinking about any advance on four. No. We have to answer questions. And I want to offer you some hopefully helpful steps by which we can answer questions using the scripture reading that we've received today from Luke's Gospel. And slightly, gently tapping into the story from Job. Jesus is a rabbi, and my understanding is within the rabbinic tradition, within Jewish tradition, to engage in rigorous conversation as a means of testing your ideas, as a means of working out which trajectory of questioning is more right or has more authenticity about it, that's just part and parcel of what they do. We tend to, as Christians, to say, well, it's in the Bible, you just find your answers in there. And it doesn't work, does it, Joe? And the reason it doesn't work is that you end up with a couple of different scenarios. One is called bullet wars. Bullet wars is that favourite pastime of some who they can quote scripture till the cows come home. And it's basically that they pair off against somebody, and the person who has a scripture that outlasts the other person's with their scripture quotation wins. So it's basically like gunfight at the OK Corral, but Christian. And it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is it simply comes down to who can use the scripture for their own ends better. There's no conversation. It's not designed to actually enhance your thinking. What it's designed to do is simply show that you can remember more. Big deal. If you can remember, and I know I'm stepping into dangerous territory. Most of you would have done memory verses in Sunday school and pride yourself on that. That's great. But you're not answering any questions. All you're doing is showing that you can quote a book. I can quote the West Wing till the cows come home. It doesn't make me US president. Thank you. You get there in the end. So what I want to do today is I just want to give you some key ideas about how you are encouraged to engage with those who want to ask questions. And today, in this environment, Christians are going to be asked questions. Why? Because we keep putting ourselves in the limelight, saying we don't want to be in the limelight, but we keep putting ourselves in the limelight because we think we should have a voice. We're not there to have a voice, we're there to engage people with where they're at. Okay? Just because you're Christian, it doesn't give you a right to be heard. And just because you're Christian, it doesn't mean you're right. I know that's a newsflash for some of us, but just because you're Christian and because you believe in God, it doesn't necessarily mean what you believe is correct. So we need to engage, because we might learn something, and that'd be fantastic. If we could learn something new every day about the nature of God and who we are, that's a good thing. Even if it's I don't know as much as I thought I did. So first thing, we need to welcome the question. We need to welcome the question. Sadducees turn up to Jesus, and the author tells us that these men, the Sadducees, they're Jews, but they don't believe in the resurrection. Not Jesus' resurrection, but resurrection. So Jews believe in resurrection, even though it's a relatively new idea at that time. But Jews believe in resurrection. Sadducees don't. Sadducees think when you die, that's it. So the author's already clued us in to what's happening behind the scenes. And they ask this wonderful question about the resurrection. This all tripped Jesus up. Well, we're intended to think that they're there to trap Jesus. Maybe. Good teacher, if this poor woman has seven husbands and they all die, to whom will she be given in the resurrection? In other words, your resurrection idea doesn't work because she's married seven here. Now, then what does she do when she gets raised from the dead? Which husband does she get? I pity the poor woman if she has to have any of them, perhaps. Or all of them. There's a lot in that tradition about marriage, carrying on the tradition, carrying on the name, story for another time. But Jesus, he hears this story, he hears this question, he knows that they don't believe in the resurrection. Jesus isn't stupid. So if an atheist rocks up to us and asks a God question, we know immediately that they don't want to ask that question. They're just looking to trip us up. Which can be a bit of fun, because then you can have a bit of verbal sparring about, well, why are you asking a question about something you don't believe in? Which is exactly what the Sadducees are doing. So it's nothing new, is it? So welcome the question. Well, thank you very much, Sadducees. That's a lovely question. Very helpful. That's a great question to ask. Welcome the question. Is your first point of call. you might not think that you know the answer, you might not know what, you might be out of your depth, but the primary response is welcome the question. Second step is know your limits. You know the best answer you can give when you don't know what the answer is? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. Or I don't know, I'll find out for you next week. You don't have to know it all. There's nobody that does know it all. And those that do think they know it all, well, very often don't. But if you say, I don't have an answer for that, I think I should know, but I need to do some more research. I think I should know, I'd like to know, can I come back to you next week? There's no harm in saying I don't know what the answer is. Or you might say, I am prepared to answer this far. That's the limit of what I know. And go no further. There is, however, this little piece here. Through thick and thin, keep your hearts at attention, so be aware, which is another clue. In adoration before Christ your Master, be ready to speak up and tell anyone who asks why you're living the way you are, and always with the utmost courtesy. From 1 Peter. In other words, be ready to answer. You might surprise yourself. If your heart's attentive to Christ, and this can be part of the thing, we might be more focused on whether we'll get this right, whether if we get this wrong, do I still get into heaven? Will God still love me? Will this person walk away? Will they laugh? If your heart's focused on Jesus, you might surprise yourself with the answer that you give. And your limits may exceed what you first thought. So know your limits and be surprised that your limits may actually be further than you realize. Does that make sense? But if you say, but Anthony, I know my limits and I don't know as much as you do, or I don't know as much as that person, or I'm just not very clever with this sort of stuff. This isn't about me. Tough. Muscle up, buttercup, is my answer to that. I got that into a sermon. I don't know how I managed to do it, but muscle up, buttercup. And by that I mean, you need to keep learning the grand cosmic story of God. You need to be encouraged, you need to be refreshed, you need to be, even if it's simply reading scripture, some say that they read a different version because it gives them fresh insights to a scripture that they are well familiar with, and all of a sudden they read a different version and they think, wow, that means this. Isn't this? Go and read a different author. Engage in conversation with someone you trust. Take your questions to somebody else. We have a question box, which is currently being used as a buzz box, but that's okay. We have a question box here. Bring your questions here. This is the trusted forum where you can bring your questions and say, I don't know, or I think I know, but can we have a conversation about it? This is the time and the place that we keep learning the grand cosmic story of God. And so when the Sadducees come to Jesus and say, Moses, our teacher, says this, so the Sadducees have no problem with the history and the theology of who Moses is and what Moses is about. They're reaching right back. And they're banking on, this is what Moses has taught us. And Jesus goes another step further. Well, yes, Moses does say that, but Moses also says this. When he's at the burning bush, I am a God of Abraham, Jacob, and Isaac. So, no, but be prepared to stretch yourself. It's not good for us to say, well, I believe in Jesus. I don't need anything else. I'm sorry, you must believe in a different Jesus to me then. Because when I believe in Jesus, he's inviting me into a living relationship that grows. If you're involved in a relationship and it's 20 years old and you know nothing new about that person, what's the value of it? You wouldn't do that today. You know, you think of your children, you think of your good friends, you think of the good friends you know, and you think of you think, oh, that delights me. I've learned something new about them. We wouldn't do that in the marriage, or maybe we would, and that could be part of the problem. So please, if you come to me and say, Anthony, I believe in Jesus and that's all I need, I think you need to, I wouldn't often say this, but you need to muscle up, Buttercup. You need to go back and explore this Jesus whom you think you know and be open to what Jesus might teach you. And you might be surprised. I very often am. As your heart is attentive to Jesus, as you speak words to people, does your answer concern you? In other words, is it about you? I'm going to answer this question so I look smart. Or I'm going to answer this question because I want to prove I'm right. Or I'm going to answer this question because I know that this involves me. This is about this relationship. And therefore, I need to invest in this conversation. If someone comes, there may be genuine times. I'm not saying that the Sadducees actually may be genuine. In Luke's gospel, it's not clear what their intent is. They may be quite curious. They may have been talking about this for weeks and they think, this is ridiculous. Who does this poor woman marry? We've got to come up with an answer. Because if Jesus is of the opinion that there's a resurrection of the dead and then this poor woman's married seven men, what do we tell her? And so the Sadducees are genuinely coming to Jesus and saying, we don't have an answer for this. What do you think? And so Jesus invests in the answer and invests in the relationship. But also, does your answer involve God? That's a pretty big thing. This is about God. Now he is God, not of the dead, but of the living. For to him, all of them are alive. So Jesus doesn't actually get in the way of the Sadducees' questioning or of his answer. He doesn't get all narky, oh, this is a stupid question, you know, you're only trying to trap me. He doesn't pivot to self-righteousness, and he doesn't get angry and dismiss them, although in some circumstances he does. He doesn't answer their question with a question yet. He does a little further on. But that's my favourite mechanism. Ask me a question, I'll ask you a question in return. It's fantastic. Because it's about intent. So, little sidebar here. I ask you a question in response to your question because I want to know if you know what you're asking. Or I want to know what your intent is and I haven't yet discovered it. Or I want to know how much you actually do know. Or I want to know if you're trapping me. And I want to test to know if you know you're trapping me. I have a myriad of reasons why I ask a question for a question. But I never ask a question to be a pain. I know that that goes contrary to people's experience. But I genuinely never ask a question just to be painful. You may experience a bit of pain when I ask questions. But it's genuinely for a good purpose. Jesus is the same. Yes, I am equating myself with Jesus here. Jesus asks questions to put people back a step. Because for Jesus, the whole prerogative is about, do you know God? Is God involved here? So is God involved? Does this answer concern you? And whatever you say, remember, there is always more. Scripture is wonderful, but also unhelpful because it makes these, what I would imagine to be wonderful big conversations, into these little snapshots of what's actually happening. In John, the beginning of John's gospel, the disciples are so entranced by who Jesus is. They meet him, they listen to him, then they spend the rest of the afternoon with him. You don't spend the rest of the afternoon with somebody you're not interested in. these conversations that these snapshots we have are such a small little snapshot of what may be a much bigger conversation. And so remember that the answer you give doesn't need to answer all the questions. So if they come to you and they ask you, can you please tell me what's the first book of the New Testament? They don't need you to give them a history in the New Testament. They're not asking for you to name all the books in the New Testament and why they're put in that order. They don't need you to give more information, but it's helpful to know there is more information. And it's also helpful to know, where is your hope? See, if your hope is, as it sometimes can, get locked up in giving the right answer, is my hope about, oh, if I get this right, I might get the Sadducees along to the synagogue on the Sabbath. It's too small. If I get this answer right, I'll show the Sadducees how smart I am. And Jesus doesn't do that. But is it living resurrection life today? And here I want to step very, very briefly into Job. I know that my Redeemer lives is one of those great verses of scripture that we hear as we prepare for Christmas in Handel's Messiah. I know my Redeemer lives, or I know that my Redeemer liveth. It echoes with this huge story. Well, how's Job saying that in a place of degradation, of being challenged by his friends that he's obviously done something wrong, and of him trying to say, but I haven't done anything wrong, but obviously something's going on in my relationship with God. And yet, even though I'm in the dust, I know my Redeemer lives. And as Jesus says, he is not a God of the dead, he's a God of the living. This is prior to his resurrection. This is not about Jesus being the one who was raised from the dead and everything's going to be okay. This is Jesus testifying that today, in this moment, God is a God not of the dead, but of the living. It is not about everything being dead and done, but of everything being brought to newness and to life. And in that age, things will be very, very different. And this age that we are currently living in can only get a glimpse of it. But I know that my Redeemer lives is enough for us to say, this question that you're asking me isn't going to conquer me. It isn't going to bring me undone. I'm not going to fall to it. I've got opportunities to answer here well and wisely. And I'm going to do better than just saying, well, I'm right and you're wrong. Or that's a stupid question. Or yeah. All those myriad of responses that bring us undone, that give people cause to say, oh, yeah, that's right. Christians just aren't interested in telling us. They're not interested in helping us. They're not interested in actually being intelligent or wise. We are wise and we are intelligent. We also have compassion and justice and mercy and resurrection on our side. We have a better narrative. We have a great narrative to tell. God is a God of the living, not of the dead. So this question that's designed potentially to trip me up doesn't have to. So welcome the question. Know your limits in answering that question. You might not get it right. You might have to go back and say, hey, I made a mistake. One of my memories of going through college was I'd get all excited when I'd be in a study group and I'd say, I know this, and answer these great questions and do all this wonderful stuff, and then think, oh my goodness, I've missed something. And I'd discover a bit more next week as I go back to class and learn a bit more through New Testament studies or Old Testament or Christology or whatever. And I think, now I've got to add back to what I said last week. And I keep building up. It got too much for some people, especially me. It's okay to go back. Know your limits. Know if the answer, the question, involves you. Allow it to involve God, because it is a God question. Keep learning the scripture story. And here I want you to remember, muscle up, buttercup. That's going to be singing in your head. That's going to be one of those earworms. Muscle up, buttercup. In other words, keep learning. Keep learning. In conversation, through reading scripture, through reading other authors, through listening to podcasts or other people, whatever. And learn that there are some unhelpful parts to that too. And whatever you say, remember that there is always more. There is always more. There's more to the story. There's more to the answer. There's more to them. You know, we have a go at the Sadducees. They kind of get this little brief moment in the spotlight, then they're off again, and we have a bit of a go against them. They don't believe in the resurrection. Wonder what else is going on in their life. Let's not be so dismissive of the Sadducees. Welcome the question. You might surprise yourself. You might actually know the answer. We're going to sing a hymn, a wonderful, and again, it's a rewrite of an old, to an old tune. Miriam Therese Winter, who rewrote the lyrics to Blessed Assurance. She was looking for a tune to do a rewrite to. And I can't remember whether, I think she was just humming the tune to this. And to her, these words came into being as she hummed the tune of Blessed Assurance. And so we have this wonderful refrain, Blessed Assurance, Amazing Grace, that echoes two major pieces of hymnic folklore, so to speak. But this is a wonderful hymn. A, because it's been written to an old tune. And B, because it's, blessed be God who caused us to be. Called us to flourish, created us free. Wow. There's always more. Let's stand and sing together, Blessed be God.